from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
My mic has a life of its own today. Hey, everybody. This is the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
And my name is Hino. Thanks so much for tuning in. This show is for all you songwriters and musicians and pedal steel players and guitar players and accordion players and everything.
Drummers and drummers. Stand-up bass players.
Just want to figure out how things
drummers,
work.
Drummers, what?
Wait, no. I said musicians.
Easy.
Whoa.
Easy.
But if you want to figure out how stuff works here in Nashville, that's what we're all about.
That's right. And remember, we don't know anything. We're out there slinging songs during the day just like you guys are. But we are able to find brilliant, talented, remarkable people, bring them into the studio, pick their brains, and let you join in the conversation as well.
Yeah, you can do that by going to Facebook.com like I'm just doing right now and go to the Music Row Show. So the Facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow, and you can like us and then chime in with your questions and comments and anything you might want to say, and we might read it on the air. You never know.
You never know.
You never know.
Listener Bob has a question.
All right. Well, we got a great show tonight. We got a legendary show tonight. We got hit songwriter, recording artist, Grand Ole Opry star, Grammy Award winner Steve Warner is going to be joining us here.
For how long?
I think the whole show.
The whole darn
We've locked
show.
The doors.
We have.
The shackles have been applied to his leg and to the chair, so he's not going anywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So we're very excited about that. But, you know, we also have something else going on, and next week is our second official time we're doing that. You know,
Music Row Showcase we're going to do.
That's right. So what we've been doing for the last 10 years is we bring in, you know, great people that have already had that great success, but we decided after 10 years of doing this, once a month we're going to bring in, there's so many great writers in this town, you know this, at the writers nights that have been here forever, that have you know, certainly paid their dues, but the simple fact is only a fraction of a fraction
get the hits,
get those big licks, but these are just great writers. So we're going to once a month showcase some of those guys and bring them in and let them have their songs heard on WLAC or WSM.
Right.
Whoops. Sorry. We were talking about LAC later.
No, WSM. Don't. And we're going to, and Steve's going to be back next week for that. So that'll be, no, I'm just kidding.
As a host, because I just got fired. Yeah, I see. I just got fired.
All right, Scott, why don't you introduce our illustrious guest here?
I'm going to, after 5 decades, 25 plus albums, 14 number one hits, 4 Grammys, and other sundry awards bestowed upon him left and right.
Yeah.
Steve just keeps creating music, amazing music, stretching boundaries and genres with his latest project, which is titled All Over the Map. This project really has something for everybody and really opened my eyes up with your versatility. I know your head's just going to get huge. It's huge.
Huger.
It's huge.
It's huge. It's
Bigly.
Excellent.
Let me tell you about your Bigly. He's not just playing guitar. He's also playing steel, lap steel, stand-up bass, drums, and then even painted the CD cover. He is either just a complete Renaissance man, or he just got tired of working with studio musicians.
He's just bored.
I'm just doing it all myself. Yeah. I'm tired of the smoke breaks. He's a longtime friend of the show, and we haven't seen him in a long time, so we're happy to see him. It's a pleasure to say, Steve Warner, we're glad you're here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Show.
Thank you, guys. Great to be back with you. I was going to try to press these up, too. I was going to press them and do everything, but...
Were you? You did the vinyl yourself, right?
Yeah,
you made the grooves and
the
vinyl.
He went and actually recycled the paper for the cardboard for the CD covers. I mean, it's just... I love how you got the CD so round.
Yeah, it's round. That's
tricky.
That's for sure.
Well done. Well
so
done.
So I must confess that I, of course, knew about your amazing guitar playing skills, but you know, you being a CGP, certified guitar player and all, by the great Chet Atkins. But I didn't know about all the other instruments you play. I mean, what can you all play, and where did you learn along the way?
Well, I think a lot of that I get. By the way, it's so great to be with you guys. It's been a long
time. It has. Long
time. Way too long.
And, you're surprised that we're still on the air, aren't you?
No, that's not what I was saying.
He's like, man, this guy, I am
shocked.
How come you guys look young and same and I look older? What happened, man? No, but
it's the lighting.
Maybe that's it. Yeah. But my dad, my father, who is my big hero, I mean, I learned to play a lot of instruments from him and through him. He was a masterful teacher and very patient man, and played, if it had strings on it, my father could play it.
Wow.
And he was so talented and was this a really, really cool songwriter and singer, and just did it all. And actually drew and painted. He kind of was a Renaissance man. He did it all himself. And I really kind of picked up a lot of the musical stuff from him. And, you know, when I was a kid, he would have lap steels laying around the house and pedal steels. You know, somebody might leave one at our house or an upright bass or what. You just never knew what he would have at the
house. And it was cool to go up and play them?
Yeah, he let us too. He encouraged it. He's like, oh, yeah, have at it, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, the only rule was put it back where you got it.
Sure.
That's about the only, which I didn't one time. I remember.
Ooh, what happened?
We played a little town. I was in grade school playing with my dad. I was like sixth grade, fifth grade, playing out with my dad's little band. And we'd play American Legion, some VFWs.
And you were playing bass, right?
I was playing at that time, actually playing drums.
Really?
Believe it or not, if you want to call it playing drums, it was pretty brutal, I think. But I was trying to play drums with my father. And we were playing in this little town about 20 miles from where we lived. It was called Fortville. And we got all the way, long story short here.
Oh, we got 2 hours.
Yeah, really.
He can make the long story
long,
if you want.
Yeah. Go deep. But we got to the little gig that night, and my dad opened his guitar, which I had that guitar in my hands probably 20 hours every day, probably at that time. And I was learning to play the guitar I learned to play on, which I still have it, by the way. But we get to this little gig, and my dad, we're about 10 minutes till we play, and my dad opens a case, and it's an empty case. I left it laying on the bed, you know. So that's a lesson learned that night. I got in some big trouble on that one. So
I'm amazed you didn't notice the weight difference.
Did not.
Well, if he was holding several things.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Think about, like, when you're coming into the show and you got several cases, you don't.
That's true.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Whatever reason, it was not
so
noticed.
What did you do? Did you do the
Well,
gig,
he or? Sent someone back. I guess he sent, like, my uncle was there or whatever. Somebody was there, my brother, my older brother. They ran back to get it, and we started late. And so I was like, I was getting daggers all night.
You know, and you're like, hey, good time for a drum solo.
Yeah, let's play Wipeout here. How about that? But anyway, you know, long answer there. But that's my dad was a wonderful man and a teacher. And
So you just learned them all along the way as you went.
I thought my dad was one of 12 kids in his family, believe it or not.
Wow.
Six boys and six girls. And they all played, you know, sang, played, did it all. I had uncles would come to our house and hang out, and they would grab a harmonica and just like kill it. You know, you're like a little kid. I'm like, my dad could too. My dad could play harmonica like crazy.
Scott can do it really well too. Yeah.
Serious?
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Oh.
Let's not make this about me, Steve. Yeah. But
anyway.
But yeah.
Let's talk about
more of the harmonica. I was born at a young age.
Yeah.
And
tell me more.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I truly thought all my uncles and all everybody that came to our house, my dad's siblings. My Aunt Doris, she could, man, great singer in church.
So you just thought everybody.
I thought I would go to my friends. It took me to about the fifth or sixth grade that I went, wait a minute, every family, when you go to their home, they're not all playing music, like everybody in the house, you know. And I thought, wow, that was strange to me. I thought that's what you did, you know.
Yeah.
And then other people would go, no, I don't really play any instruments. I go, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, you know? It's like, next thing you're gonna tell me you don't like chocolate.
Exactly. You know, so I just thought that was a real common thing, you know. And but it was a freedom that my dad passed along. My mother, not so much. Not musical at all.
Really?
So just my father's side. But yeah,
she was maybe more organized and
she had the mother thing was her deal, man.
Yeah.
She had six kids, and
she had that down.
She was that plus. She was a mom all the way. Not so much, you know, the music stuff was okay. It's all right, you know, but the She tried to sing. I'll put it this way. She tried to sing in church. You know, it was some, I listen, I think back on it and go, wow, that's interesting. Those
interesting.
Those note selections that you picked, that's interesting how you did that. But
not everyone would make those choices. Yeah, so that's very brave of you.
Reformed jazz almost. Yeah. That's nice. I like
that. But did she enjoy the music, though?
Yeah, she liked it. Okay. Yeah, she did enjoy it, I think.
Because sometimes when musicians are married to non-musicians, they kind of get sick of it, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. So, but she enjoyed it. She was around it. I mean, all my siblings and then all of my dad's family. So she got a large dose of it her whole life.
Yeah.
As far as the five siblings then, any of them continue on with music as well?
Not so much. My brother Terry is about the only one. I have one brother, David, he's a freelance illustrator and artist. You know, he does fine arts and a brilliant illustrator. People in this room have probably seen his work and didn't know it. He's been in some real big magazines through the years. Some of his illustrations, you know, those guys don't say who.
Yeah, they don't usually put their big name at the bottom.
But he's been in some huge, you know, Playboy magazine and Elle magazine, Cosmopolitan. I mean, he's done some big things through his career. But and then my brother Terry followed the musical path. He has never lived in Nashville. He always lived in a little town in Kentucky. But he's traveled with me since day number one.
And, oh, cool.
And
really?
He sang on tons of my records and really started out playing drums in my band years ago. He's the last guy standing in my band. He's still the original.
Wow.
He and another guy that's still with me. But, yeah, he's been with me since day one. I got to give him a gold watch one of these days, I guess.
Yeah.
It's a gosh, that's been since.
Gold-plated. Nobody's going to really know.
Just take one of your CDs and spray paint it gold and be like an autograph.
That's a good idea.
There you go. Well, let's talk about the CD. We're going to bounce all over the place here. I hope you don't mind. Oh, we're not going chronologically.
All over the map. That's what I do.
See, I like what I do. Look at that.
It seems like as I was listening to it, I was just thinking, man, this just had to be fun to record. So what was the mindset going into the song selection and the production of this?
Well, the first song that I wrote was, there's a song on the album called CGP. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of messing around one night I have a little mini guitar that I practice on and write with and stuff. And I was in the house one night and the chorus, for some reason, I was thinking about reminiscing and thinking in my mind about the days that I worked with Chet Atkins and our relationship. I guess it might have been, you know, I don't know why I was doing that, but I was thinking about those days. And
for our listeners, just say what CGP is.
CGP stands for, well, Chet Atkins many years ago had an album came out and it was called Chet Atkins CGP. And the CGP was like a title, you know, behind his, or a degree,
like
whatever.
Esquire or something.
Right,
like that.
But like, you know, and so I asked Chet and he said, well, that stands for, he goes, I never went to Vanderbilt or Harvard or whatever. He said, so I never got a degree and I regret that. He said, so I gave myself a degree. It's called CGP. And I said, what's Chet Atkins CGP? And I go, what does that stand for? And he goes, Certified Guitar Picker. Mm-hmm. And so he gave himself that title. And then a couple of years later, they still do an annual Chet Atkins Appreciation Society, right, a big convention every year, and all these guys come out of the woodworks from all over the world. And at one of those later, Chet he had this plaque made with all these inscription on it, therefore, you know,
for
whereas
with all,
we are for with all. Yeah. And it was hilarious, very Mark Twain-ish, and, uh-huh, and it was pretty funny. And he gave Jerry Reed this honor. He made him an honorary CGP. Well, Chet did this. Then later he made a friend of his named John Knowles. He made him a CGP.
Yeah.
This was
actually,
kind of,
he's on your project.
He's
yeah
on the project.
Yeah.
And then so it went down the line and he made five guys, I think, Jerry Reed, John Knowles, Tommy Emmanuel, who a great player, guitar player from Australia. Oh, he's insane.
Yeah.
And then myself. And and I know there would have been more because that was something that Chet was doing very just for fun. He was having this, pardon me, a presentation and giving everybody's little presentation was different too. Mine was a little different than the other guys. And if Chet had not, he became very ill and was, you know, had a pretty rough battle there and for a couple of years. And he kind of waned at that point. There was no more CGPs. But I was, I think Tommy, I was the next, to, I think I was the next to the last, and then Tommy was the last CGP. And Paul Yandell was made a CGP after Chet passed his, Merle's, Chet's daughter Merle. Paul Yandell, who was like a right-hand guy of Chet's for 30 years, he was kind of in on the idea of he should have been a CGP from the start,
right.
But he recused himself because kind of helped come up with the idea of it. And so Merle said, you know, he's got to be one. So after Chet died, he was the only one that became one a CGP after Chet was gone by Chet's daughter. So, and that's it. So I'm a certified guitar picker, I guess. So it's what it says on the front of my car out there.
Right.
So
yeah.
I've got a license plate that says.
That is awesome.
Well, then it must be true.
It must be true. And I read it on the internet.
Well, then it is true.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Everything on the internet is true.
Yes.
Let's take a break. This segment was brought to you by our friends at Main Street Productions. Now, it's funny because we don't have the TV shows that are playing nonstop country music videos anymore like they used to. But
you still need a video.
You still are doing
videos.
Mullets
on there, didn't there?
A lot of mullets. We're not going to point fingers or name names.
Yeah. I can point two fingers right now, actually.
I sort of had a mini mullet. Mine was it wasn't like a Joe Diffie mullet or a...
Yeah. No, it was no Neil McCoy.
It's not your dirty Neil McCoy mullet. No, I didn't have that series.
No.
I had more of a minor, little mini one, you know.
It was a non-committal mullet.
It wasn't really a party in the bag. It was more just kind of a...
A gathering.
A gathering,
yeah. It was a good time, yeah. It's a nice chat.
Time. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Anyways, there are still videos being out there. Of course, with YouTube, you know,
sure.
It's really how a lot of people are getting their music out there all over the world. And we've met a guy named Fred.
Yeah.
That has his company, Main Street Productions. He does great video
really
work.
He really does. And he understands the songwriter budget because, you know, your average songwriter can actually afford to put a video together. Not break the bank and have it look professional because he uses the same equipment. I mean, he shoots feature films.
Yeah.
So he's got that caliber of equipment.
Yeah.
And he knows how to use it, which is the important part.
Yep. Yep. So we highly recommend you check him out. His website is mainstreetproductions.org. That is mainstreetproductions.org.
And the org people are always good people, so you know that.
Right, right. All right, let's take a break. We'll be All back right. with more of Steve Warner. You're listening to The Music Row Show. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That is Steve Warner. That's a song called Drop Top off of his brand new project called All Over the Map. And that's the little Matt Rawlings tickling the ivories there.
Yes,
always
sir.
Been one of my favorite keyboard players.
Yeah.
He's really,
Willie
really
Weeks,
good.
Willie Weeks playing bass and Greg Morrow playing drums and Matt Rawlings.
Man.
And, so you did let other people in.
I did. Okay. Those guys I'm letting in.
Yeah.
Rob McNally played some guitar, too.
That's
on this
awesome.
Record. Yeah, just great players.
Matt Rawlings had a couple of his own, like, jazz projects that he put out.
Oh, yeah.
And I have those.
Oh,
and
man, he's incredible.
Just amazing.
Yep.
Yeah.
I've been knowing Matt for a long time. He's played on my records for a while.
Wow. Scott's off in La La Land.
I know,
there.
I'm reading. Back to the CD about All Over the Map. What we were just talking about the mindset going in and just how you approached it as a because you know this is your label now, so it's a whole different world for the last few albums for yourself being able to just.
That's why it is all over the map because I had no one saying, "Well, you can't do that."
Yeah,
you
can't
what
mix
are you
it up.
Thinking there, boy? But. I tell you, I was saying earlier, I started out writing the song. I was messing around at the house one night, and the CGP song just kind of happened. I was thinking, CGP, Tommy John and me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, Proclamation saying so from Chester B. I went, oh, my gosh, I'm writing this song. And so it just all kind of popped out. And that was the very first song. And then I go, wow, I have a studio at my house. So I go, I need to get Tommy and John and myself, we need to cut this song and get all the three CGPs together. Right, that's what we did. And then I wrote another song called Way It Goes. It just, I started messing with that one, you know, one day.
I got a question about that song later on.
Yeah, I
kind of
had a little groove going on that, just on acoustic guitar. And then I went, I think I'm making a record. It seems like I'm making a record here. And so I just kept writing and writing. And in the middle of making this record, I was playing my gut string guitar up in the studio one day, and the song Augustine's Dream I started playing some licks. I detuned to a drop D and was playing some very Baroque kind of classical stuff, which a lot of people ask me. They say, did you study classical guitar? I did not, but I sure did on my own through the years, you know, really? Kind of, you know, how you do. But and then I started writing that little classical piece, and then I... right when I did it in the studio, the beauty of having the studio, I go, oh, let me set up a mic and just start recording this. And I recorded a little click, and then I started doing takes of that song right there, right as I was writing.
As I was writing it,
I go, I need to get this down so I don't forget it. So the nice thing is I have microphones just kind of right there, so I just sort of, it was really easy to just go boom, boom, and I was doing it right there. So while I was doing this record, I was cutting tracks while I was working.
That is awesome that you can do that.
Yeah, it was kind of neat, kind of juggling a couple things at the same time, you know. It's that's the neat thing about, you kind of get on a roll, you know. I was just in that mode of the creativity was happening. It was flowing, you know. It's like, and then I started thinking about, you know, next couple of days I'm sitting with my lap steel going like, oh, here's a cool, so let's cut some tracks on that. I was just on fire, you know, so I'm trying to capture it all as quickly as I could do it, you know.
Do you ever find that like some of the technology or the stuff that you need to use to do all that gets in your way?
Absolutely.
Because I mean, I've tried doing that kind of thing before, and next thing I know, it's 3 hours later and I'm fiddling with cables.
On a plug-in.
And then I'm like, now where was I? And it's gone.
Well,
you know?
See, and that's the thing. That's the danger right there. You're exactly correct. And that's, but then you bring an engineer in and you lose your, like, you know, the part of the being, I like the solitude for me is cool, being in a studio and you're just, you know, I like that. It's a double-edged sword because then you bring someone in and it messes up your mojo sort of because, you know, so it, for me, having everything self-working and pretty easy, you know, to do it, it works. That was great for me. But yeah, I never wanted to be an engineer. I just wanted to make music. But these days, I think young people always ask me that, you know, some pointers for, you know, young writers or players, whatever, you know, always say, well, it's a necessary evil almost these days. You have to be sort of an engineer too. And, you know, but it takes away from your creativity sometimes as a writer.
But
I
guess if you just leave it set up so that all you have to do is hit record and
have it, that's a key, I think, is having it kind of like ready, you know, ready to go all the time, pretty much. So, and I've learned just enough to be dangerous, I think. I engineered some of that record, part of it. I did myself, that classical piece, I did all that. And the a lot of it, I kind of, the stuff at my place, I did all, engineered it myself. But
well, I'm sure 20 albums in, you've learned a lot. You've been in a lot of studios.
Yeah.
You know what the buttons do.
That's the thing, you kind of get onto it, you know.
Yeah.
I'm smart enough to know I need real engineers too, you know. So I bring in the big guys and when it really gets down to the nitty gritty, I want those real engineers. And Julian King engineered this project, and Randy Gardner helped a lot too. So those two guys. So,
with Augustine's Dream, then was what we're hearing there, was that happening right as you were doing it?
Yeah.
Wow.
I wrote it, and then I kind of refined it. You know, I wrote it. I kind of had it basically the first section, and then I recorded the first section before I wrote the second section. I was actually
because you didn't want to forget it.
Yeah, I better not forget this because it really kind of was happening. So I hurried over and did just a click track, a little shaker, just to give me in my headphones. I was hearing the shaker, and that's all I had. I just put the shaker down the right tempo I wanted, and then I set up. I have a U67 and a C12 that I put them both up. Did a stereo thing on in front of my gut string. I have a Harada, Harada, it's a Takamine, but it's a Highline, their Highline classical series, and I have one of those I've had it for a long time, and it's my favorite gut string. And so I grabbed that and just started. I put the first section down, then I went And then I started playing the second section. Yeah, I kind of did it in parts, you know. Mm-hmm.
That is cool.
So it's kind of, I like it that it's, you catch it as it's flowing, you know, so. But I like it too. There's nothing better as well to have a whole band in there and do that, you know, when you're carving.
Right.
With a whole room full of players. It's just, man, there's nothing better. I think I like making the record better than anything. I love making a record. Spending the money. I like doing that. You know? I just
a neat surprise.
It is. You never know what. I tell my wife, Karen, I said, I just like every 3 or 4 years, I just like spending, you know, $100,000 or something making a record, you know.
Yeah.
It's just what I do, you know.
That's nice.
Yeah. What else are you going to do with it?
Exactly. Right. I mean, that's what I do. I'm a recording artist. I got to record.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. You have this beautiful D28 sitting here on your lap. You feel like playing a
I do. Playing a yeah. If you'll bear with me, I'm,
yeah.
You know, my weird allergy throat and all that, but... I'll do this song. May I do the story of the?
Of course.
When I Still Matter to You, if I can make it through it. But yeah. This song, I'll tell you a quick story on it. In 96, I did a cruise. We did several cruises on the SS Norway and some other mm-hmm. ships through the years. But this, we had done it a lot. And someone called me once and they said, would you like to go on a cruise? I go, let me guess, the Caribbean. And they go, yeah, it's back to St. Thomas, St. John, St. Martin. Well, I've done that 3 or 4 times through the years and, excuse me, always enjoyed it. But this time they said, what do you guys, you want to take the band and do one of the cruises? My manager called and I said, I don't know. You know, and they said, well, Merle Haggard is the headliner. I go, you know what? We probably could do that.
Yeah,
cruise.
Yeah, that we can do.
We might be able to make
something
that
just
one.
Opened up.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and I knew Merle somewhat. I knew him. You know, from working shows with him a little bit, some TV and so forth, but didn't know him real well, but knew him a little. And so we got on the ship and we hung out and had a blast. And he invited my wife and I, he and his wife, Teresa, invited us down to their cabin one night. And there was a guitar there. And of course, I was like, man, I hope this guitar gets used here in a minute or two. And of course, we did. We played some songs and Merle said, do something you just wrote. And I said, well, let me do this. And I did One Small Miracle, which was I wrote with Bill Anderson. It was at that time, it just was a hit for Brian White.
Okay.
And called One Small Miracle. And so he goes, oh, I like that a lot. And he goes, well, do me something else you're working on. And so I did When I Still Matter to You. But I'd only had a piece of it going, and I played what I had, and I said, well, this is all I got. I'm trying to figure out where to take it after this. And I was hoping that he would say what he did say. He said, well, play it for me again. Let me hear it. And I went, that's awesome, you know. And I played it what I had again, and he said, well, what if you say, and I'm like writing as fast as I can, you know, writing it down. And so we left there, and I got home, and I made a little work tape of it, just a guitar vocal and stuff, and sent it to him. And he called and said he really liked it. And that's the last, we just left it there. And so now fast forward till when the whole world mourned the loss of the great Merle Haggard. And
right.
And I was thinking about that song, and I found it on an ADAT, a DAT tape, the little DATs, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I thought, well, I haven't even had my DAT player on in 15 years. So I turned on my little DAT player and put it in. Yeah, exactly. Blow off the dust.
Yeah.
And it actually was error. It wouldn't let me, and it chewed it. It kept it. It locked onto it. And so I go, oh, no. I mean, so I never did hear that. Dad, my wife Karen had the lyrics. She found the lyrics, and I kind of revisited it, and I go, oh, yeah, there's the melody. It kind of came back to me, and so I re-demoed it, and we were halfway making this record at the time, and I never even thought about it. But I go, you know what? My demo was turning out so cool. I thought, you know, this is not going to be a demo. This needs to be the record, and I need to put it on my album. And that's what we did. It definitely is the left field for the record.
Yes.
Because it's just so straight country. But I'll do you a little piece if you want.
I would love it.
If you can hear this. If I can make it through it. We were so young, crazy and free. The universe was ours. We had it all, you and me. Our favorite place of all was in each other's arms. Yeah, those were the days when you were my girl, the love of my life. You were my whole world. That was when I still mattered to you. But somebody else matters to you now. Maybe I can't have you, but I still need you anyhow. And all I have left are these memories of love we once knew. When I still matter to you. What we had together, oh, I thought it was real. Now this broken heart of mine, Lord, it just won't heal. And you moved on with your new life. I wish I could too. I remember when you knew that you still mattered to me. You said you'd stay here where you still ought to be. But that was when I still mattered to you. But somebody else matters to you now. Maybe I can't have you, but I still need you anyhow. And all I have left are these memories of love we once knew. When I still matter to you.
Wow.
We got an audience here.
Woo-hoo!
Look at that.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Steve Warner, nice. Co-write with
Merle Haggard.
Merle Haggard. My goodness. All right, we're going to take a break and catch our breath, and we'll be back with much more of Steve Warner. You're listening to The Music Row Show. Stick around.
Show, the music spy show. That's a song called Nashville Spyline. That's Steve Warner with guest Dwayne Eddy,
man,
who's got one of the more identifiable sounds in the world.
I know it exactly.
And how cool is that you got, man, to have that guy on your project?
Hall of Famer, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and Musicians Hall of Fame. So that's cool hanging out with that guy. He was so much fun. And yeah, he's the king of twang, that's for sure.
Absolutely. So. I mean, I could hear a TV. Did you guys have a TV show in mind when you were doing that?
What?
I could hear that being on one.
I think it should be, if they ever do another Austin Powers movie,
the
theme song, you know, so that's what I'm lobbying for. Greg Morrow, or one of the players, I think Greg Morrow, the day we cut it, he's laughing, he listened to a playback, he said, that should be in any Tarantino movie. I'm all for that, but... yeah, that was so much fun to play. And Dwayne Eddy, of course,
Peter Gunn. I remember in my early 20s, me and my buddy Steve Schubert walking around with our sunglasses on indoors going, doom, 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 doom.
Exactly.
And just thinking we were the two goofiest. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the guitar? What is that making that great tone?
That's the Dwayne Eddy model Gretsch guitar, of course.
There you go.
And it's, you know, my dad used to call that the flusher, you know, the tremolo whammy bar.
He
would do those dive bombs on that. It's like, yeah, that's what I want on this. And cause he just naturally, he does exactly what you hear in your mind, you know, and we wrote that together. We kind of out in my studio, we were playing around one day, and we just sort of came up with that little lick and started expanding on that. And but I was like, yes, that's what I want is that. And then the name Spyline came later, Nashville Spyline, much later, of course. But it just reminded me of a spy kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, like
James
absolutely.
Bond and all that. And so we thought that title fit it well. And, oh, man, I love Dwayne Eddy. He and his wife, Dee, they're just beautiful. And everybody loves Dwayne. I mean, loves his play. And I remember buying his singles, you know, when I was a kid.
It's interesting how certain players have a tone that belongs to them. Yeah. Dwayne's one of them. Carlos Santana, you hear that guitar,
you know, exactly.
That's who it is.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah. How
much of that is gear and how much of that is technique?
That is a great question. I think with Dwayne, I think it's a little bit of each with Dwayne's case. I think most players it might be. But Dwayne, he made that, the whammy bar, he was doing that before anybody was
right. Doing
it. You know, now you see, you know, Jeff Beck and all these guys do it and they use it as part of their thing, you know, but Dwayne was doing that back in the 50s, you know, and so I think it's a little bit of each in this case because he made that his sound. And, you know, and when that, we did the session and he comes in, he had a guy, Carter's guy, bring his stuff in. And I'm watching his equipment going like, oh, yeah, he's bringing the big guns in here. I know what's getting ready to happen. And he pulled out that Gretsch, Dwayne Eddy, my name on it. It's like, man, and I've got footage of we filmed that whole day and it was, I got tons of cool footage. But I remember on the footage saying like, yeah, I pointed at his guitar as he was playing it. I knelt down. I looked at the camera and said, that's cool when it says your name on the pick guard, you know,
right. Model,
you know. So anyway, I think that's just his sound. Like you say, it's so recognizable when you hear one note, you go Dwayne Eddy. You know?
Yep.
And he's so interesting, such an interesting guy, too. He was talking about in the late 50s, you know, he said two people that were his great friends in Hollywood were Paladin, you know, Richard Boone. In fact, he was on a couple episodes of Paladin and Richard Boone.
Okay.
And from that TV show. And Bronson.
Charles Bronson.
They were roommates, he and Charles Bronson.
Really?
They were great friends, you know, Charles Bronson. And so I guess they ran around as young guys in Hollywood.
Yeah.
But those stories are like, oh my gosh, that's history, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you have a ton of story. I mean, think about the people you've played with and the things that you've experienced. You know, I was watching a video of you playing with Dottie West and you know, you're just a kid.
Yeah,
you were just a baby face.
I met her and started playing in her band when I was 17. So
that's nuts.
I was late in 73. I would have been 17. So yeah, I mean, but aren't we all lucky though and grateful that we have done the stuff we've done?
Oh my.
It's pretty cool stuff we've got to do. And the Dottie West, I worked with Dottie for 3 years, played in her band, and she was a kind of like a big sister to me. She, you know, and she had the redheaded temper. She had that. A few times she pulled it out on me too. So,
well, we need to take a break, but I want to come back and talk about that. That was actually
absolutely.
On my list of questions was working with Dottie. So stick around. We're going to be back with more of Steve Warner. You're listening to The Music Row Show. We'll be right back.
Right back.
Yes.
A true country gent, Chet was one of a kind. He found a long time ago what we're all still trying to find. He was the man, a six-string superstar. Everybody's Mr. Guitar. You know the CGP.
You gotta wait for that.
Chet started that.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's Steve Warner doing CGP, a song all about Chet, off of his brand new project called All Over the Map. Steve Warner, and he's got a great illustration on the front that he drew himself,
painted
himself,
watercolor.
Yeah,
yeah.
And there's water in the picture, so you probably used it for that, right? The watercolor.
Watercolor.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is my tip of the hat to my pal Chet. I miss Chet, man, all the time. We were so close and just a really, really good friend. And, you know, on Music Row, I'd find myself going by his office so much, you know, and hanging out with him and playing and recording. And, yeah. Oh, it's just great. We started out as friends. I played in his band for, you know, we started out making records together. He signed me to RCA in 77, believe it or not. And then not long after that, he needed a bass player. His bass player left or whatever. He needed a guy to go on the road. So I go, I'll go do it. So I went on the road with him and played with him while we were making records, and eventually led to me having my first hit, and he fired me from his band, and now it's a whole nother story. But I always tell people I got fired from the best. Chet Atkins fired me. I had my first hit record, and he goes, "You're out of here. You need to get going." So, well, we stayed friends all the way till 2001. He died in June of 2001. So,
it sounds like when I listened to "Down Sawmill Road," the track on your new album that you did with Ricky Staggs, I hear a lot of Chet in that particular track with those cascading chords and everything. Was he in the room with you?
No question about it, man. He was, for sure. And I think you can hear him on other tracks too. Probably, I think on Augustine's Dream, he's around me too a little bit. Yeah, his influences are always around us. And man, I've learned so much. And I was listening to one of his records the other day. I was pulled it out and was listening, actually listening on his Macintosh gear that he gave me that used to be in his office that I listened on, you know, originally when I first met him at the old RCA studios up there. Oh, his office at RCA. And I was listening and going like, how did he do that again? And I set my needle back and I go, I'm still learning licks from him. Wow. Even today, he's been gone since 2001. But I bet you there's other folks doing the same thing, other guitar players, still learning from that guy today, you know. So.
Yeah. So I'm a lyrics guy, and it's not unusual for instrumentals to lose me like a third of the way into it.
I hear you.
I was engaged thoroughly in your instrumentals in this start to finish.
Oh, man, thank you.
How do you approach those, and are there secrets to keeping them? Because not everybody is an instrumental person, but I mean, seriously, I was like, to the point I was going, oh, that's over already? You know, whereas most of the time I'm like,
well, you know what? Instrumentals are tricky because you're right about that. They're not in vogue, and they're not, you know, they've not been on radio for quite some time. It's true. Really hear them. You know, they used to, you know, there used to be some big instrumentals.
Dwayne Eddy.
Exactly. Yeah. The rest of my case, Chet, you know, and Santo and Johnny, and a lot of cool instrumental records through the past. But I tell you, my approach to it is I really try to say something without lyrics, you know, and I really, that's not easy to do sometimes because, and I try to emote, you know, some kind of, feelings with, you know, as I'm writing an instrumental, there's a story behind it when I'm doing it. I already have in mind usually what it's about. I'm not just like doing pretty chords and music, right, you know, trying to put some chords together. I'm actually trying to, you know, like on an album I did called Guitar Laboratory a few records back, mm-hmm, I did a song. I can't even say the name of it, but it's a French title. And in English, it means "I will never forget." And there's not one lyric in it about this, but before I even wrote a note, the whole idea was about a World War II soldier that comes back from the war and had fallen in love with a French girl. I even knew the town and everything. And he falls in love with this girl and comes back to the United States and misses her for the rest of his life, saying,
why didn't Mary's his hometown girl.
Yeah, and why didn't I? What could have been? And so that would have been, I could have written lyrics to that. I mean, that would have been a cool lyric song. But I tried to, if you go back on that record sometime, if you're bored to death, go listen to that. It's on it's on Guitar Laboratory. And but I had a French, you know, I had Joey from Riders in the Sky come out and play some awesome accordion and some French style, you know, accordion but anyway, so I'm always trying to, like with Nashville Spyline, you know, I'm trying to, there's an idea from the get-go on what you know, I try to approach. And of course, you have Dwayne Eddy steering the ship there with you. That's not bad, but it's awesome, as a matter of fact. But yeah, so I'm really always trying to say something. And another little thing I try to do too is I never try to keep it real comfortable. I try to, the minute you get kind of used to one feeling, I go to section B, or then I go to a bridge section, or I just totally modulate or go somewhere else. Or
maybe that's it, because I think a lot of times it just gets very repetitive, and they're really into it, but that doesn't necessarily make other people into it.
But I think if you watch, and I don't put me in this category whatsoever, but if you look at the classic composers, you know, that's what they do. They, mm-hmm. you know, then it could be a long piece of music, but they'll write a piece, and then right when you're just used to it, you know, it makes a left turn, and you go, oh, there's a cool. They would go to a whole different section, right. and it's yeah. a different chord, totally a different. You know, you're in a different key now, and you go, how are they going to wind back around and get back to that original? And they do, you know. So,
yeah.
And that's always, to me, that was those composers that did that, whoever it might be. Even the country songwriters, composers, whatever, whoever did that to me, it was so appealing because it kept me interested. And today, their attention span is like that, you know.
It's
so
true.
To me, it's, I think you got to always have another little curveball, another little something to throw at them to keep yeah. their attention. So,
well, why don't we take a short break, but we're going to come back and do a whole other hour with our guest here, Steve Warner. And we'll be back in just a few minutes on the Music Row Show.